neighbors. Welcome to Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. I'm Ivan Emke, your host. This is episode 2 of season 2. Innovation. It's a word that permeates our culture these days, even if it seems to be thin on the ground sometimes. We're often tricked into thinking innovation occurs only in busy but sterile laboratories or cluttered coffee-fueled computer dens or at that new complex up the highway that was opened with great fanfare and the cutting of ceremonial ribbons. So we can almost be forgiven that we overlook the innovation that occurs in our backyards and basements, sometimes daily. Maybe your neighbor is an innovator. If you live in Flat Rock, you could be right.
This is a whole new thing for me. Up until 2 years ago, I never ever grew any food in my life. I can honestly say I've never tasted food the way that I've tasted it out of my own garden.
Have we gotten over here in my Labrador sprung?
No.
No?
No, I don't think so. There's no doubt it's an amazing process to be able to grow your own food, store it, consume it, and know that you grew it all.
You don't have to garden very long in Newfoundland Labrador without starting to dream about season extension. But due to an unfortunate development snafu back in the 1980s, a myth has developed that the province has a checkered relationship with greenhouses. Mention the word sprung, the name of the company that built a large greenhouse back last century, and some member of the chattering classes will start to guffaw. And that is sad, because the province actually has some great examples of season extension technology. That's the real story, though it's often lost. So, a friend of mine, Dan Rubin, kept telling me I had to go visit this fellow in Flat Rock. You see, this fellow had built an earth-sheltered greenhouse, a certified passive solar house, and a fine root cellar. So in early 2020, just after Snowmageddon, and just before the COVID closed down, Dan and I visited today's guest. You may know Dan as a musician, he's an educator, a seed saver, he's a general impresario for local food. We headed north, out of St. John's, past the urban sprawl to where there are powerful grand views of the ocean. We stopped on a side street in Flat Rock and headed into the house between high snowbanks. Come on into the kitchen with us. It's cozy. There's tea.
My name's Dave Goodyear. We're here in Flat Rock, Newfoundland.
You have something in the yard here that I've heard about. What is it?
Well, I got a lot of stuff in the yard.
I didn't hear about all of it.
When I built the property, my plan was to look at a more sustainable lifestyle, try to integrate things like long-term storage solutions for food, and I guess a way to go about creating food year-round as, I guess, food security measures, knowing there are food security issues here that aren't apparent to everybody. So we set to build a house that was energy efficient, a garden that we could manage in the summer, produce all of our yearly vegetables, a cellar to store all the vegetables in, and then a greenhouse that we could potentially grow in 4 seasons. My hope initially was 3 seasons, but I've been able to grow for 4.
That's quite amazing.
It's pretty wild, yeah.
Take me back to the beginning of the list. It sounds like this was a major decision where you have all of those things you're trying to put together.
So it's funny how this all started. This all started in 2016. I was looking at job options outside of the province, fear of things like Muskrat Falls and
there.
And I was offered a job in another province and got there and realized, wow, energy costs here are pretty high. And then kind of figured, well, you know, like in order to get around that, I have to look at what my options are going to be there, because obviously, you know, you don't want to move somewhere else and not be as well off. So I said, well, you know, I need to look into what people are doing. And I realized that people in this province were starting to build these passive houses, which is an international standard. So in the, I guess, the jigs and the reels, I ended up deciding that I wasn't going to go, but then realized that, okay, I'm still stuck with a variety of issues that need to be taken care of, especially like moving forward. So I said, well, I'll just build the energy efficient house here, and I'll look at seeing that I can do this project with all local materials, local trades, nothing different. Whatever I could do, I wanted to be able to source here with things that were literally off the shelf at most building supply dealers, and then kind of expand on that in year two with a garden that was easy to take care of on, like, you know, the masses of lawns and stuff that need, you know, need a lot of upkeep, and grow our own stuff but have storage facility for it. And then finally, in the last year, the third year of the project, was to build a 3-season, possibly 4-season greenhouse to grow in.
Yeah. Do you have a background in engineering?
No, physics, actually.
Physics.
There is a lot of science in building. In fact, when I built the house, there wasn't really any builders here qualified to build passive house and have it certified. So I actually went to Ryerson. I did the Passive House Builders course, did certification, came here, built my house, and I was the first ever passive house in Newfoundland built by a passive house builder, which was me.
Excellent.
But then a lot of those techniques that are used can actually be kind of used towards other projects, like cellars and like passive, you know, solar greenhouses.
Yeah.
I mean, the techniques in terms of a cellar are really what they've been all along. You're using the thermal mass of the earth to keep a temperature constant. And in this case, you're digging low enough that the temperature year-round is somewhere around 4 to 5 Celsius. In the summer, the cellar really creeps up above that because it's kind of berm is above ground. But, you know, you're able to use the cellar from October until the middle of June, which is pretty impressive.
That's great.
Right? That's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's all just thermal mass and a few vents.
How
right?
deep is the cellar?
The cellar at the floor is about 7 feet under. In order to kind of conserve some of that ground heat to keep things from freezing in the winter, the whole structure was insulated halfway up before it was backfilled.
So the old cellars that you see around here and there, did they have it down pretty well?
They had it down pretty well, and I've seen some pretty impressive ones. Didn't have any of the scientific background. It was just, you know, we'd make a hole in the ground and we'd put a cover on it.
Probably.
You know, it stays cold.
How big is the greenhouse?
So the exterior is 12 by 24, so, you know, it's a decent-sized greenhouse, and for the most part, it's mostly underground. The back, like the north side, is about 4.5-5 feet under. The front side is only about 2 feet under, and there's a knee wall with, I guess, a glazing all the way along the front, and then there's a steep pitched roof, about 45-degree pitch on the front and the back.
Would it be what we call an earth-sheltered greenhouse?
Well, it's exactly what it is.
Did you look at other greenhouses like this, or what was your planning process?
Well, it's funny, like, you know, you get at these things, you know you're working with a slope, you didn't know really what it was going to be like until the excavator got in, but you had some idea. I knew that I was going to partially berm, I guess, the back end or the north side.
Yes.
Didn't really know what was going to happen with the south side because of the way the land fell. I kind of knew it was going to be an earth berm structure, but I didn't know how it was going to work out. But I did have a couple designs in mind. And
is this the second winter or first winter?
This is the first winter.
This is the first winter. So every day you're going out there and you're...
We eat from the greenhouse every day.
What kind of vegetables?
So I'm already after going through one crop rotation now. So, you know, it's really about choosing crops that suit the weather, right? So in September, the days are still fairly long. There's still a nice bit of sun. So you're going to have to deal with residual heat. The idea in one of these earth shelter greenhouses is to not have too many holes in the envelope. You want to make sure that the envelope is fairly airtight. Any place where you create an open hole, you're going to create air leakage, and that loop means you're going to lose energy. You know, it has a fan that's able to take out so much of the hot air, but a lot of it gets stored underground in the summer so that you can kind of wade through long, I guess, cold stretches in the winter. So we planted a variety of plants that, you know, that could handle that residual heat. So we had broccoli rab, we had Savannah mustard, mizuna, a lot of Asian greens, Meking choy. We had white lady turnips, which are kind of a small salad turnip. Radishes, I had two crops of those in there. And salad greens. Well, then there were a whole lot of salad greens.
Yeah.
So by the time that, you know, the end of October comes, you're talking, you're getting less than 10 hours of daylight, which in some climates probably means you still got enough sun. In our climate, it means that plants start to slow down.
Yeah.
They still grow. Slowly. And by the time you get to December, you know, the inside of the greenhouse is maybe averaging 4 to 5 Celsius a day, but the plants are really dormant. They're not really doing a whole lot, but it acts as a living refrigerator. You go and you pick from it whenever you need it. And it's all still alive, and it's all still vibrant and green. But now, this time of the year now, you know, the days start expanding. You have more sun, more heat. Like, I've germinated arugula last week. Yeah,
that
it's growing.
Like right after the storm.
Yeah, actually, it was like the day after the storm. I was seeing it.
And it is a week after the great Newfoundland blizzard of 2020, and it's full of greens that are growing.
Last night it hit, I think maybe it was around -8 here, and last night I think it got down to 3.2. It was 3.2 this morning.
You're not using any heating?
There's a heater in there, but the thermostat is turned down and is somewhere above zero, but it hasn't kicked in yet.
So that's just to make sure it doesn't freeze.
It's just to make sure it doesn't freeze. Yeah. But now there is an underground piping system that's called a ground-to-air heat transfer system that's installed that will come on if it gets below 2 degrees, and that's yet to be tripped. Yeah. Like it's,
and that accesses the heat that you stored in the soil underneath the greenhouse by piping air down into there and letting that heat absorb
into
the soil, a gas system.
Yeah.
So I asked David about music that he listened listen to while working. And he said he was more likely to turn it off while he worked so that he could concentrate. But he does play guitar. And when I listened to his video blogs, there was some music for the intro and the extra, and I asked him about it, and yes, he had played and recorded it himself. And I could use it. Here's David Goodyear in one of his other creative endeavors. Played and recorded by David Goodyear, except for the drums, which were played by a computer program. Let's head back to the kitchen with David Goodyear and Dan Rubin.
I'm not a proponent of saying that it's a good idea to use greenhouses in Newfoundland to grow tomatoes into winter, okay? Because I think that, you know, you need a lot of extra energy.
Yes.
But there's been days in this greenhouse where, with the GAT system on and cooling it, I've been only just barely able to keep it cool to 15 degrees. If I've turned that off, it would be probably 25 degrees in there. And as long as it stays above 10, let's say in the nighttime, you're probably good. Well, I think even if you look at salad green production, you don't need high temperatures for it. You just need some sunlight. And some of the stuff grows really well, even less than 10-hour days.
Is the soil temperature the same as the ambient temperature, or is it slightly higher?
So, like, on days like this, the soil temperature actually gets fairly warm.
Yeah.
So you can go out there anytime and touch the trays. You know, wow, they're nice and warm.
You have in the back of your mind probably a bunch of experiments you're going to try doing.
Yeah, I mean, it's all been experimental so far, because this is a whole new thing for me. Up until 2 years ago, I never ever grew any food in my life.
Yes.
See, if you're listening at home, there's hope for you.
There's hope for everyone. Like anybody that says they don't know what to do, I didn't know what to do.
Okay, so David, what portion, what percentage of your home vegetables at this point with the garden and the greenhouse are you buying?
None. I don't buy any.
You don't buy any vegetables?
We don't buy anything.
First time, year round, we
buy absolutely. That's not true. Last year in June, we bought one bag of carrots from Israel.
Well,
because it's the only ones we could find. But I said, you know what? This year, I'm going to plant more. I learned from that mistake. So, but we have crispy carrots in the cellar until June. We don't buy any vegetables anymore. We produce all of that, and you know, it's funny. We probably eat more vegetables now than we ever did before.
What would you estimate the square footage of your raised beds out in front of the house would be?
The raised beds and
roughly.
I mean, there's the potato garden, so it's all kind of one.
Yeah, including that.
Yeah. I don't know. It's like I'd say it's maybe the footprint of the house, 500 square feet, maybe.
Okay, so then 500 square feet.
Yeah.
One can grow the vegetables to completely supply a family of three or four.
As long as you're growing the right varieties.
Yeah.
That's exactly the point.
So, but in 2 years, how did you figure out the right varieties?
I looked back 70, 80 years and I said, well, what were they growing back 70, 80 years ago? Yeah. They didn't have fruit coming in from the Amazon. Yeah. They had root vegetables and potatoes.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, they'll store until June.
If you were to do it again, is there anything that you'd do slightly differently? I mean,
with respect to all of it, you mean?
Maybe just the greenhouse or whatever. Because I think that's one of the pieces that people who have thought about greenhouses would be very interested in.
I don't think so.
Yeah,
It's worked out probably better than I would have expected.
Yeah.
But in terms of would I change anything, I don't think so. I'm still experimenting at this point. And the only issue with I see with a winter greenhouse, an earth berm winter greenhouse, and it's not really an issue as much as I think you need to just be able to work around how you're going to grow in it, is the summer. In the summer months, you know, although you have lots of thermal mass, if you don't have enough ventilation, will it get hot in there?
Right.
And there have been some places that have winter, like these deep winter greenhouses in Minnesota in particular. Yep. These should be really for farmers that want to extend all year round. But let's say you got loads of other things you can do in the summer. So one of the things they recommend in the summertime is to close the structure up, let it bake, kill any pathogens, any let's say, infestations that you might have had. Now, for me, the garden outside keeps me busy too. So, you know, it's going to be a balancing act for me trying to keep the greenhouse going and the garden. Yes.
And you do your own compost here?
But I'd never bring my own compost into the greenhouse. There are various reasons why you might not want to do that. First of all, introducing pests into the greenhouse that you don't want there, bringing in exterior pathogens that are soil-borne. So you're better off starting with, you know, a product that's sterile and then adding to it, keeping whatever's in the greenhouse inside the greenhouse, even tools. Like, don't bring your tools outside and use them outside. Because, you know, you could decide that you're going to grow baby carrots, and then all of a sudden you've used tools in the garden that over the summer you didn't realize that you had carrot rust fly, and now they're in your greenhouse. And this time of the year, they'd be out there flying around like crazy.
So your experience in the last couple of years doing all of this, has it changed the way you think about the discussion around food in Newfoundland and Labrador?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's a problem. I really don't think that people realize how much of a problem it is. And it was funny, I mean, I was up until 3 or 4 years ago, you got your food at the grocery store. You didn't know where it came from. I just went there. That's what I did.
Yeah.
That's what most people do.
Yes.
And there's a lack of connection with the food that you eat. You don't know where it comes from. You just know that you have food on the table. And I think that connection with food is something that, as a people in Newfoundland, I think we've lost it big time. There's very little production here. Mm-hmm. And I think it needs to go back to that, and maybe even like community-based farms. We definitely need to create some sort of production here. But it can be done. I mean, I've done it.
You're showing it here, yeah.
Right?
Have we gotten over here in my Labrador sprung?
No.
No?
No, I don't think so. It's funny, as soon as the word greenhouse is mentioned, it's the first thing people refer to, right? I don't think that people realize that maybe they had good intention, trying to provide local food and all that stuff. But the fact of the matter is that growing in a northern climate with limited daylight, low temperatures, it was ill-conceived. And I think, you know, like, there's been a sort of a food revolution, too, in the last, let's say, 10 years. Chefs are more creative. They try to use things that are more local. You know, they realize that there are constraints in what they can get locally, so they try to work around it, which is a great model.
Time for another musical break. Here's another track from David. It's called Untitled. Goodyear, playing the rhythm, lead, and bass guitars. Today I'm talking to David at his homestead in Flat Rock. We're joined by Dan Rubin as well. We start this section by asking about whether David has a lot of folks who come by to check out his greenhouse and home.
There's always people getting in touch. And I've had a few people that are commercial actually wondering about it.
Yeah, is that the same for your house, the passive?
It's funny, you know. People always ask the question, how much does it cost? It's an important question to ask. You know, there has to be some return on the investment. I can happily tell you that that greenhouse will be paid off in under 5 years at the rate that we eat now. The value of what's coming out of there and the quality of what comes out of there, it'll be paid off in under 5 years.
Say again what your total costs into the greenhouse up to the time it was running.
All in all, now the GAT system added maybe 15% extra. Without the GAT, I would say the total cost would have been around 10,000. And instead it was around 12. But if I look at what we're eating out of that, man, I tell you, it doesn't stop. And it's every day.
What's the life cycle of something like that?
How long the building will last?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it depends on, you know, how well it's built. I built that to last as long as the house.
As the house, yeah. We talked earlier about, you know, this whole provincial drive to increase food production. Do ideas occur to you about how do we do that?
I feel like I'm a guinea pig here. I've taken a lot of my own personal money to get around what other people haven't been able to do, and I'm hoping that over time it'll show that, listen, it can be done here, regardless of any government studies, any bigwig people that are doing all kinds of research on all this stuff. Like, here's a working model, and it's scale. And I think that we're moving into a time when, you know, we've invested a lot of time and money as a province into projects that we don't all necessarily agree with. Muskrat Falls,
sure, one, yeah.
But the fact of the matter is that whatever we've chewed up in terms of our carbon footprint on that is going to create some source of renewable energy for some unforeseeable future. Yeah. But it's a way for us to use that energy to use supplement lighting in our sheltered greenhouses that are commercial size, that now we don't need to worry about burning fossil fuels in those to keep them warm for long periods of time. Like, we really only need supplemental light, and pretty much everything will grow. And really, without it, like, maybe our growing season goes from June until September, not even including all of September. So you got 2.5 months. Yeah. So you're able to extend, really, you know, what's less than a 3-month growing window to something now that you're able to do 12 months of the year. And even in those cold shoulder months, you're talking about increasing the average temperature to somewhere that's almost maybe a zone or two south of you.
There are a lot of communities in Labrador who are thinking about different kinds of greenhouses or whatever. Is there any reason why this would not work there?
Once we get beyond a certain date, I mean, they got loads of daylight, which is great. In the winter, I think, you know, they'll run into issues. But there are, and I've seen these off-grid, you fly in basically a shipping container, and it has everything you need for renewable energy built in. I'm not sure how well they're going to work, but it could be an option. The big issue with a system like that really is that there's long-term upkeep. You know, anytime you got any type of battery system, they can only be drained so far. You need to have upkeep to it in order to maintain it. If you drain the batteries too far, they become useless. Not to mention the fact that what do you do with the batteries when their lifetime is spent? Yeah. So even if you could grow 3 seasons, have things at least in a soil bed approximately a little above zero so they're still alive. Really, you're talking now about creating a living refrigerator and just using those throughout that winter period when you really can't grow. But I mean, you know, who knows, with renewable power and where things are going, maybe we'll have better options, right? Yeah.
I like your metaphor. He says living refrigerator.
You know, you think about these Boston lettuce, I think.
Yes.
The hydroponic, they have the root ball is on it.
Yeah, that's right.
The root ball is on it. And there's a little bit of water down in the bottom of it. And it stays alive in your fridge forever because it's alive, right? I mean, you haven't cut off its source of life, right?
Yeah.
The roots are just part of the veins of the plant. They go right on up through and out through everything. Without them, there's no life. I look at a cellar as a living refrigerator. It's a little different.
But the carrots are still alive.
But they're still alive. The roots aren't alive, they rot. Yeah. So the key is just to create an environment where it stays alive. And just happens that roots like it underground, they like it cool, and they like high humidity. Yeah. So you create those conditions and it stays alive.
What's your favorite local food?
If somebody asked me to choose between rice and potatoes, I would always take potatoes. I would eat potatoes for every meal. Yeah, I could have potatoes 100 ways, and I'd never get bored of them.
But is there a certain variety of potatoes?
Doesn't really matter. I'm not fond on sweet potatoes. I like the traditional potato, right?
Yeah.
You know, the good old potato tuber. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
If we're buying food that's shipped in from all over the place, often picked before it's fully ripe, have people lost the ability to taste like a good carrot or a good strawberry?
I think so. These carrots that you get from wherever they're growing them, they're all perfectly so straight. And people don't realize how unnatural that looks.
A straight carrot is not natural.
Of course it's not, right? I mean, there are rocks everywhere. Anyway, that's a whole separate thing.
Yeah.
But to sit down and chew on a carrot out of the garden, like, it's just so completely different than pulling one out of a refrigerator. It's just different.
Is our desire to eat anything at any time of the year causing a lack of taste as well? So people will buy food that's out of season.
It's quite possible. I mean, I tend to just eat whatever's in season.
Yeah.
Whatever's in season is whatever's out there or in the greenhouse.
You realize how unusual that is, though.
I know. And it is unusual. But the thing is, like, I can honestly say I've never tasted food the way that I've tasted it out of my own garden. Since at least growing my own stuff, I've learned to appreciate the flavors a lot more than I ever did before. And I try to keep food simple. If you can grow your own food and you're able to consume it yourself, your own location, no transportation costs, no having to go to the grocery store, you realize that your grocery store is your backyard and you're the shopper. You're the only shopper there.
Every week there's a new special.
You know, there's been days when my wife has texted me, asked me, you know, what are you doing? I'm like, well, I'm heading off to the Flat Rock grocery store. And you go in the cellar, close up the door, turn on the light, and then, what am I going to pick out of the cellar today? And then all of a sudden you got like pounds and pounds of beautiful beautiful food that you grew that you're able to keep for all this time. And it's an amazing feeling.
So you too out there could have your own greenhouse for the price of a snowmobile.
I know, like a snowmobile. Over the past 70, 80 years, I think there has been a shift, you know, and that shift has been driven by commercialism. People that have extra money to do playthings, and playthings are almost always about purchasing. And that's fine too, if that's what you're into. But for me, I see those things as things that, you know, ultimately they require large amounts of input. There's no such thing as a free ride when it comes to purchasing those things. You know, you always need something else to go along. So you go and you buy the Skidoo and you need the trailer. Then, my truck's not big enough to pull the trailer. Yeah. So it's really all about choices. And I think in general, a lot of people have the money to do these things. And I've heard people say that they've been talking about food security and blah, 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 and, you know, oh my God, you know, the grocery store is horrible. There's nothing there. And, you know, what are we going to have to do next? Grow our own carrots? I've heard people say that.
Really?
It was like the most horrible thing in the world that you were going to have to subject yourself to growing a carrot.
Here's the question I want to ask is, what does it feel like when you walk out into the greenhouse?
You instantly feel, wow, look at all this greenery. And it's in the middle of winter. And it's so desolate outside and cold. But look in here. It really is an amazing thing to be able to walk in there on a sunny day, right when it's -8 outdoors. Yeah, you could be out driving a Skidoo, increasing your carbon footprint and all that stuff.
Getting
or
cold.
You'd be growing your own food. And you walk in and you're like, wow, I gotta get some trays ready and plant some seeds and see what's gonna happen. Because that little thing is just an amazing pocket of life, just waiting to burst, right? There's no doubt it's an amazing process to be able to grow your own food, store it, consume it, and know that you grew it all. There's always the fear of failure, right? But you can't make progress unless you fail, right? You have to learn from those mistakes. And the thing is that if you don't jump in and make those mistakes, how can you expect to move anywhere? And I guess, like, I approach everything in life like that, like whether it's gardening or, you know, building a house or building a greenhouse or, you know, using my hands for things I've never done before. It's always about pushing the envelope. And, okay, if you fail, it's no big deal. You just start over. And now you have a new plan.
David, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
And I hope that many more people find out about your experiments here, and you're so gracious to provide information.
Well, I think as a group of gardeners and, you know, people that want to push agriculture, I think we're all kind of part of that. You know, that let's call it the way forward.
Okay. I don't think that's taken yet.
Right?
This is the way forward on agriculture. Thanks.
Innovation and optimism, all in one interview. Now that was a fun chat. You got to hear only about a quarter of it, but David will be back later this season of the show, so don't fret. And if you want to know more about David Goodyear's projects, be sure to check out The Homestead at Flat Rock on Facebook or Twitter or YouTube or Instagram or Blogspot. Gone are the days when homesteaders communicated with ink-splattered mimeographed newsletters. Now they are successful social media influencers.
Whatever I could do, I wanted to be able to source here with things that were literally off the shelf at most building supply dealers. I look back 70, 80 years and I said, well, what were they growing back 70, 80 years ago? They didn't have fruit coming in from the Amazon. They had root vegetables and potatoes. I'm not a proponent of saying that it's a good idea to use greenhouses in Newfoundland to grow tomatoes in the winter. We don't buy any vegetables anymore. We produce all of that, and, you know, it's funny, we probably eat more vegetables now than we ever did before. It's really all about choices, and I think in general a lot of people have the money to do these things.
This has been Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. To listen to other episodes of this show or for more information, go to fittoeatnl.ca. The songs for today's show were Project 2 and Untitled, written and played by our guest David Goodyear. The theme music, Cluckold Hen, was performed this week by the Red Hen String Band. This is a production of Kitchen Table Communications. I'm Ivan Emke. Join me again next time. I'll be right here. Happy trails.
Let's call it the way forward.
Ain't laid a bed since late last fall.